Hi there, this is Dan Delta Collins. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and also youtube.com/wanderingdms. And now, enjoy the show.
Hi everyone, welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan. Today on Wandering DMs, we're going to be talking about battle maps! Yes, from gaming paper to wet erase maps to elaborate 3D terrain projector systems, modern digital platforms, every solution comes with its own strengths, weaknesses, and surprises. We have tried them all. We're going to figure out what works best for you today, and a whole lot more on Wandering DMs.
Before we get into today's conversation, I'll remind everyone that, as always, at the end of the show, we'll be hosting our after-party chat. That is a live video chat that Dan and I host on our Discord server, and you can join in by becoming a patron. Visit patreon.com/wanderingdms, join at any tier, and you'll get an invite to the Discord server. Get your account set up over there during the course of the show, and maybe about 10 or 15 minutes after the end of the show, Dan and I will be there to chat with you all live.
We love that part of our week. You know, a bunch of exciting stuff that's coming up this week, next week or two. One is, I don't know if our viewers are aware, you know, there's a big anniversary happening next weekend, Paul, and we're going to be live streaming all weekend long in order to celebrate that. So look forward to that at the end of the week, everybody, right here on the Wandering DMs channel.
Excellent. Excellent. It was the 250th anniversary of the...
Back in detail. No spoilers, Paul. No spoilers, Paul. We'll talk about that later.
Also,
the other thing I got to point out to our fans is today is Tau Day. So happy Tau Day to all who celebrate, such as myself. It's a big day here in our household. We have fully round desserts and dinners here on Tau Day. Not like Pi Day where you only get half of a circle. What's up with that garbage? So I did pitch a circular themed episode for today that was declined. You don't want to get into the technical details of the circle constant. That's fine. That's fine. We'll talk about battle maps. I love that too.
Dan is the only one who feels passionate about this holiday that I've met ever.
I'm passionate enough for 10 passionate men, Paul.
Excellent. Excellent. All right, let's talk about battle maps. So this actually came up because of next week's streaming that we're going to be doing. We're going to be live streaming a whole bunch of gaming from here up my house. Dan's coming up. Max and Lauren will be with us. Tanya will be here. Rachel, we'll have a whole bunch of guests. Mike Woods should be with us again, I believe. So yeah, we'll have a nice big full table. We'll be playing some old school D&D all weekend and live streaming as much of it as we can. Dan, you're going to be DM for this one.
I am, and this is one of the fairly few times that I've been DM in an actual play here on the channel. So I've been looking forward to this for a while. May put one on the wall, as we say in the racing business. So we'll see how this goes with me DMing a long form thing for almost the first time here. So. I love DMing D&D. It is my favorite thing to do. So we'll see how that comes off to public watchers.
Excellent. So as part of that, I've been asking Dan, like, what do you want on the table? What do I need to point cameras at? What's going on? What are we going to be looking at? What are we going to have? And that got us into the whole discussion of like, What are you going to use? Are you going to use the classic wet erase? Here I've got the good old classic wet erase vinyl mat. That's the kind of like typical go to, I think.
You know, and the funny thing is how much I go back and I kind of flip flop, and I think you're kind of in the same ballpark with this, Paul. And I will say that historically, I normally come to the table expecting to do most of the stuff in theater of the mind, just verbal descriptions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Gary, you know, Gygax is on record. Once we started playing D&D, we didn't use miniatures anymore. And then having a battle map, like, in case things get tricky or complicated. And, you know, like, Gygax having said that, there's a lot of the early classic modules that come with prepared battle maps in the adventure for the complicated stuff. Like, the A-series does that a whole lot.
That's true. That's a good point. I forgot that, right? Those come with some kind of preset, you know.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's the interesting thing I find. Okay, so let's... So we have a comment here. Bakuyas mentioned in the chat, bust out all the Dwarven Forge. Yeah, we had a whole bunch of Dwarven Forge that we got for the Big Bad. Still got boxes of it sitting here. Many thanks to our kind sponsors there. It really helped elevate the show, I think. I got a ton of this beautiful stuff lying around. We could absolutely use that. We talked about this, Anne, and you said, you want the Dwarven Forge. I've got it ready to go. And I think the thing for me about that, I feel like these are the two opposite ends of the spectrum here.
Right.
On the one hand, you've got the, I don't know, lazy, like, there's a pad on the table and I'm just going to sketch something real quick when it's necessary. And like you, yeah, I generally prefer theater of the mind whenever possible. And then if I must, because it's getting complicated or I'm spending too many times trying to think up the words to describe the situation and all the physics that are happening, and again, let me just get a model on the table so I can show you what's happening. Versus like Dwarven Forge, the problem I have with Dwarven Forge is gorgeous for these kinds of things where you have a set piece where you know, like, this is the terrain that the players are going to be playing in. But for like off the cuff play in the midst of a campaign, when on any given week I have no idea where the players are going, like, it's just too slow, right? Too slow to, you know, off the cuff be like, oh, we need a room that looks like this with a cave and a pillar and a, you know, then we're sifting through the box. You have a 2x2 piece with a wall on the left side. Oh, man.
Okay. Right? Do you have a balcony? Do you have a this? Like, how much do you, like, the what we're looking at from our the Big Bad show, that was a single set piece area. It's a gorgeous water feature, a river running through it. Yep. Do you have enough water pieces? Do you have it? Is it big enough? Is it wide enough?
And just to put that together, like, what I noticed when watching the other big streams, right? Like, if you look at, like, Critical Role or Dimension 20.
Right.
It usually is. They're going to pull this stuff out when it's a big set piece that clearly they anticipated was going to be needed. And so they reassembled it. It's on a board, on the side, ready to go. And they lift it up, stick it in, boom, here it is on the table. Let's do it. It worked great for the Big Bad because that's all the Big Bad was one big set piece, right?
Right.
For a longer campaign, I don't know. I think the simplicity of, let me just draw with some markers, maybe is better.
Well, that was my concern, and I think for both you and me, Paul, pacing of the game is possibly the number one top priority. And I do, you know, thinking about, I do have a bit of an appetite to use the Dwarven Forge stuff, which I have frankly not. It does look great if we're doing a stream or even like a convention game would be impressive. I once read some gentleman at a convention that was running the classic Steading of the Hill Giant Chief adventure. And apparently what he had done, and you can kind of see people doing this at Gary Con or something like that. What he'd done is he'd laid out the entire complex, the entire Steading of the Hill Giant Chief in Dwarven Forge, and then covered it up, right? Kind of like you would do maybe with some kind of map. And then as players entered an area, he'd remove the cover from that section, and all the hallways and all the rooms and everything was all laid out. But that would be an enormous undertaking. And frankly, I don't even think we have enough material to accomplish that. But if you knew.
I remember when I was going to Gen Con in the 90s, right? But before Dwarven Forge existed. I remember once signing up for a game that was a first edition AD&D game that was called Visual AD&D. That was the title. And there was some description there about how visually stunning the game was going to be. And when I showed up, literally what they had a set of nicely painted miniatures for all the characters. And then they had stacks of wooden boxes that were elaborate dioramas of every room of the dungeon that we were about to play in.
Oh,
and one by one, as we moved from one room to another, they would go, oh, get box 37, and they'd pull it out and they'd set it on the table. And it was like, it was a single physical piece that was like handcrafted.
Okay.
It was absolutely gorgeous, right? Full on diorama, right? With like the back and two or sometimes three sides. Right. So you had to like get in there and look and like move, I got to reach in and move the figure around. It was almost fully, you know, 3D. It was kind of that diorama style, right? Rather than being top down with just like the top is open, the top, it had a top. Usually it was like a side that was open or maybe two sides. Yeah. Fascinating thing.
Wow.
Definitely gave that feeling of more of a cramped dungeon. But the interesting thing was that's what I remember about that game is that it's those dioramas.
Yeah.
What was the actual plot? Was the adventure fun? Maybe, I think. I can't remember super well. Mostly I remember pulling out the next box and everybody oohing and aahing and poking around and looking at it. And that in and of itself just took some time, right? It was just some time of like...
Okay, yeah, interesting.
People look and admire the art, which is fine, again, but it's time away from killing orc.
The Gary Con Wargaming Hall... Right, is I'm always agog when I walk in because every table is like that. And they probably have it set up for the whole weekend, actually. So there's like some kind of game on a particular table that's running all weekend. They have an elaborate set piece. There was one this year that was the entire Temple of Elemental Evil in complete constructed form if they were going to run a couple war games on and stuff like that. Our friend BJ would do pretty elaborate set pieces for our house con. And similarly, I remember one year he showed up with like a big cliff piece. Like it was a styrofoam built out of styrofoam. And it was like a whole cliff. Mm. And I think take apart the top of it and reveal caves in the sides of the cliffs. And occasionally I actually kind of slightly feel bad for the people doing the construction. I'm like, was that the best use here? Particularly when it's a one-off, right? If we have some pieces that we can reuse, like for a war game, maybe you can mix and match. You know, our friend William has sent me a couple beautiful pieces that he does, some towers and siege material, siege engines, and like a beautiful Viking ship that I could potentially use in a Book of War game, possibly reuse that stuff. But when you're making it for a one-off dungeon, I actually feel a little bit trepidatious about, was this the best use of time? Are we getting enough out of this, frankly? And I almost feel bad about the people that do that much stuff for one-off thing. Looks gorgeous, though.
I mean, you know, that kind of crafting is a hobby in and of itself, right? And I'm sure there's lots of people who do that just for the joy of doing that, right?
Yeah.
Of building the thing. And then, you know, I don't know, bringing it to the convention to put into a game. Part of it is about getting the oohs and ahs of like, look at my nice art and people appreciating it. And why shouldn't they? It's lovely.
Real artists ship. That makes sense.
So there's again, I have notes here of different options and stuff, but I feel like the chat has beaten me to so many of them. I'm just gonna roll with what the chat's talking about. So the chat is talking about butcher paper. And here's I have a slight variation on butcher paper, which is a while back. I bought a bunch of rolls of a product called gaming paper, which is basically big rolls of paper that are like basically it's like wrapping paper quality paper, right?
Yeah.
And yeah. I mean, it probably is printed by the same people who make wrapping paper. It's in fact probably even easier for them because all they're doing is printing a grid on it. and so it's just big paper. And the idea is like you can have as much as you need, roll it out. You can have huge amounts of space. Draw on it with permanent marker because who cares? You're just going to toss the damn thing at the end anyway.
Yep.
And then you and I used this. I think I have another image here. You and I used this at some conventions for boss fight for breakfast, which was the precursor to the big bad. And we would draw out very large scale things. Here's a giant dragon cave that we're going to play in. And then I just roll it up and bring that.
Yeah.
And so the funny thing is, when I was digging around in my stuff recently, you know, for the upcoming game, I found this stuff. I still have them because I kept them. Because exactly what you're talking about. Like, I'm like, oh, I went through the effort to draw this stuff. If I ever want to run it again, I should keep it. Now I have rolls upon rolls of low quality paper with drawings, with these like hodgepodge maps that I could have just as easily drawn on a wet erase board. I don't know. It's nice, I guess. But I eventually did end up.
Okay. Okay. You have no idea how hard that hits me, Paul, because I have similar bits and pieces of things. I'm borderline pack rat. It's hard for me to throw stuff out. So I would also maintain stuff like that. You know, the butcher paper is among the first things that I think of, the first things that I used in my gaming career. I think we know that the Blackmore guys started off commonly doing that. We saw Dave McGarry with a bunch of, like, that's how the town of Blackmore was originally drawn out. And they threw that out for wargaming purposes. He still has that. He's shown it to us in person. So it's a, you know, and again, at one point that was, you know, if you think about what resources are available, that predates
that's what they had.
Having a gaming industry, having a gaming product specialized industry. So as time goes forward, you are changing what materials you have available to you and therefore changing what your gaming experience is like. So yeah, certainly the first thing that I think of. I recall, Paul, that the paper was a little bit light. So when we were carrying it into the boss fight and I had it in my hands, I was worried that I was going to unfold it and tear it easily was one concern that I had.
Absolutely the quality of wrapping paper. If you've ever wrapped a gift in cheap wrapping paper that you buy down at the at CVS or whatever, it's yes, it's that quality paper. Even has that shine to it, right? So it's absolutely that quality of paper, which is not huge, but again, like, maybe that I feel less bad then about crumpling up and recycling the whole thing at the end. You know, butcher paper is pretty hefty stuff. by comparison.
True. Yeah.
Well, let's verge into technology a little bit, because we should talk about like what we did. In fact, I'll talk about what we did in the first birthday game. If you go back and watch those videos still on our channel, you can kind of see that here. And that's an overhead projector, right? So that's what I had was, it's actually started with something you introduced me to, which was rather than using one of these battle mats, one of these kind of printed with grids and such for your wet erase, was to just go down to the fabric store and buying a big chunk of white vinyl.
The
material they sell. You can buy yourself a big chunk of white vinyl if you ever wanted. I want a battle mat that I can draw on with wet erase, but I don't want a grid. I want freeform open space. So I had a piece of that. I don't know. I played with that for a little bit. I think you played with that for a little bit. People kind of wandered away from it after not too long. But that's what this is.
I did the same thing. You know, I also, this is a good reminder, because I actually might not have remembered that, is there was a while where I was kind of, again, digging into the war game thing. And sometimes I am, you know, on the fence about grid or no grid. And I'm very happy with how Book of War plays out. I kind of like the old wargaming. I like aspects like needing to approximate the distance. Not everybody does that. Gamma Dan will differ on that particular point. But I like those kinds of things. And so I did have a gridless piece of vinyl. And I even went so far as I made a couple of acrylic templates of, like, this is a standard 10-foot wide hallway. And I can just slap it down and trace around it quickly to try to make the hallways. And I was doing that for a while. And likewise, it was a little bit slow to lay out. No matter what I did, it was taking for you know, interior dungeon spaces, it was taking a little bit longer to lay out than I ever wanted. And I wound up, like you, I wound up getting away from that and mostly using the gridded battle map specifically because it's faster for me, the DM, to transfer my dungeon map in front of the players. And then you've got the square corners, which most of the interior places are going to have. And that's probably the primary reason I did that, is just for the speed of drawing it.
Yeah, you really can't beat these standard battle mats for speed.
Yeah.
I will say that.
Yep.
So this was nice. Honestly, again, this is, I pre-prepared, so I had, but I'm just using my regular maps. I'm just using the exact maps that I was using for the game. They're blown up thanks to, it's a projector, right? So I can get it to the correct scale for the miniatures. I had some software set up where I had like two windows, like I had a laptop in front of me where I'm looking at my version of the map, and then it's also going over the projector, and I have a little paintbrush so I can just mask or unmask stuff. So as you're exploring, I'm erasing the path so that you can see what's what. So that was really nice for like exploration parts. I think of all the battle mats I've used for exploration rather than for just combat, that was my favorite.
Yeah.
Also, you didn't see the whole map at any time, right? I'm scrolling. We're just seeing a small subsection of the map on the table at any given moment. it kind of shortcuts some of my description. I don't have to say, okay, you go down a 10 foot wide, 50 foot long passageway. It turns to the south, and then it goes 30 more feet and hits a T intersection. Like, you could just see it. And I think, Dan, you were mapping, so you were just looking at what's on the table and drawing. So you had your
made
own
it real
map.
Easy.
Yeah. So that was all very nice. I enjoyed that a lot. I still probably end up doing a bit more prep than I normally would, because I think I did end up having to make copies of the maps that had certain secrets removed. So I couldn't just take the raw map and chuck it up there. I had to erase the secret doors and stuff.
Right.
So there was that. So there's some setup there, but not as much as building the whole set in Dwarvenforge.
Right.
It's more adaptable again to like, okay, the battle spilled out from room A to room B or across this corridor or whatnot. So it worked well for that. Terrible for portability. And I can't even do it in this current house I'm in. Like, it was very specific to the house and the space that we were in. I had a very tall ceiling. I was able to rig up the projector to point down at the tabletop. It has all the problems of a projector, right? Which is, it looks, even in this picture, it looks pretty washed out. So if it's nighttime and dark out, it looks a little bit better. And during the day,
right? I recall that. We were dealing with light in the windows and issues like that. I remember, like, because there was actually a storm front coming through, and we were having to rapidly deal with lighting issues as the daylight changed outside. Yeah, but it was beautiful. I've never seen a setup like that. Also, you had a permanent gaming space there, so it was worthwhile, I think, for you to set that projector up basically permanently for that purpose. Beautiful. I think nowadays, right, the analog would be one of these big gaming screens, right? One of these like tabletop-sized gaming screens that you'd use. You know, again, gorgeous, but again, you've got a little bit of a transportation problem. Me here in New York, I don't have a car, and that kind of device would be much too large for me to possibly haul around anyplace.
Yeah, we had a friend who would bring one of these. He actually built them, right? He had a company that was building these things, and he would bring one to HelgaCon. Great, beautiful thing to play on top of. And this one, clearly, this random picture I found, this was somebody on Etsy's builds them. It's a television in a box, is what it is, right? Somebody's taken a TV and shoved it in a box. I want to think the one that Toby had built was also a touch device, which is just freaking cool. Portabilities. This is not an easy thing to say lug around the convention floor. Now you got to make, especially if you're running at a convention, you're gonna have to make special requests. I need to be near a power source. I need enough room to put out my giant, digital screen, et cetera. Yeah, it's a lot.
Right. Here in, where I am, I'm in New York. I don't have a car. I usually game at other people's houses. So for the year or two that I was running my Star Frontiers campaign over at Max's house, I had a very specific agenda for how I packed my bag, actually. And I wound up reusing a bowling backpack. And I had a very specific kind of Tetris-y, like put this here, put that here, put the map in here, zip this up, tie that. And I was just on the cusp of having too much stuff to fit in the bag. So for me, portability is as a DM is kind of a big issue, and that would not be something I could possibly use.
Yeah, portability is definitely an issue. Now, I've seen a few different attempts at making something that maybe is a halfway in between like the gorgeous 3D terrain of Dwarvenforge and the battle mat that tries to be a little more portable. I wish I could have found a picture of this one, Dan. Unfortunately, I don't have it to share with folks. But again, in the 90s, in like the early 90s when I was going to Gen Con, I bought this product that was like a 12-inch by 12-inch metal plate. It was just a flat piece of metal with felt on the bottom. And on the top was painted a little grid, a little 12 by 12 grid of inch squares that looked like dungeon flagstone. And then they gave these little like 2 inch by 2 inch plastic wall pieces with a magnet on it. And stick it on there and you got a piece of magnet. And they only had two varieties. They had like flat wall and they had like a piece with an open doorway. That was it. That's all you got. You could still make like really intricate mazes and stuff out of it. I was a little annoyed at the fact that they were always 2 inches wide. Like I was like, I need the one inch wide pieces for our odd little, whatever. But it was pretty portable. It was pretty like the board was almost too small, right? 12 by 12.
That's very small. Tiny. Yeah.
But it was a fascinating thing for those, that very early day of like wanting some kind of 3D terrain.
You know what that reminds me of is probably the earliest digital D&D game. It might have been by Mattel or something like that. It was kind of like that. Is you had very primitive computing type devices. You had about a book sized tabletop with a grid on it, and I think you'd move a piece around. And basically, if you tried to move, exploring the dungeon was if you tried to move from one square to another, and it turns out to be a wall. It would like beep at you, a warning beep. You can't do that. Huh. And you'd have a physical little tile you could put there to mark the fact that you just discovered a wall between those particular squares. And you'd wind up building out this kind of labyrinth as you tried to move through the dungeon. And it could be different every time, right? Kind of smacks me of that. Interesting. As part of this, I want to talk about... Before it gets too late, as we talk about each of these things, I want to talk about like, again, as you interface with your materials, does that how willing are we to change the actual adventure, change the actual dungeon or whatever to match up with different materials? And sometimes you were saying earlier, you kind of want to emphasize the verbal component of stuff. And, which is what, Gary reports, what all the early players report and they were doing. And I'm wondering how much that was a limitation of the materials available versus really the point of the game. And I go back and forth about that sometimes because many of us agree that the player mapping part can be egregious and maybe it's good to get away from that. But on the other hand, I think about like Peter Perla in his Art of War Gaming, talk about these kinds of games are fundamentally a conversation, that we war game in order to have a conversation about the state of the world with other human beings. And so I go back and forth sometimes about is the conversation the important part, or is that just really a limitation that now that we have materials like battle maps and Dwarven Forge and stuff like that, that we can do better than that. So I will say, like with my Star Frontiers campaign, I redrew all of the areas. Like this, like the classic Star Frontiers box set is very miniatures heavy. I was very happy to lean into that for 2 years. I had the stream Dan's Old Time Mini Show where I, created, I recast, I copied by hand all the miniatures that I kind of wanted to put on display. All of our fights were on a battle map. The box set comes with all these elaborate poster-sized battle maps for everything you're going to possibly encounter, a whole bunch of counters for every different type of alien race or device in the game. And that was all great, but for our miniatures, they're a different scale. So I actually redrew all the encounter areas so that they would fit on my battle map. And they were usually close. It wasn't usually a really dramatic alteration, but I was willing to take the time and redraw things specifically so that they would fit on the battle map that I have. And I think that was well worth the effort. And as we look at other options, we might think about like, how would you possibly change your adventure design to interface with this particular resource? Because I think I'm getting more and more willing to do that these days.
Interesting. I feel like I usually am looking at it in the opposite direction, where I'm looking mm-hmm. for more clever things to do on the table to represent stuff that I feel like is being limited. For example, there was a long time there, not a long time, but it was a couple of years where I was playing a lot with the idea of using 10 millimeter miniatures so that I could get yes. bigger spaces on the table.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right. Which I still think is super fun. You get like, it's so much more real estate for those tiny little figures and they look mm-hmm. great. But they're really small. And when you want to zoom in on the action, you've got this tiny little, you know, square inch of a cluster of guys beating on each other. And yeah, you're a little zoomed out. A little weird,
but it's a better fit if you want to go with the classic 1 inch 10 feet. That's actually a good fit. The 25 millimeter miniature fundamentally doesn't fit in that space. Pull up.
I usually don't want to, and I'd say like I'm also thinking of things now, like there's certain things again, I think I would rather not screw with the material and it, just for the sake of what the representation on the table is. And I'm thinking of things now, like I do enjoy the kind of, you know, what you always call the upsy-downsy maps.
Right. Right.
You know, right. The Dyson logos where there's like, mm-hmm. which is easier to do on a wet erase battle map because we can kind of do topographical stuff and say like, okay, this is a 10-foot drop here and this is a ramp up. And we all just understand what that means. Whereas if I have Dwarven Forge, oh boy, I've just created a much more difficult problem for myself.
Right. Pull up. How about just as I'm thinking about these kinds of things, like how do you modify the gaming experience? Could you pull up the photo that I prepped from the Rappin' Athic game that we were in? It's got Heart of Bill Webb in it. Yeah. Okay. So this is the giant game with I think like 27 people in it a couple years ago at Gary Con, I think. Bill Webb is running part of Rappin' Athic. So that is at the time, Bill Webb would get up on the table. It was such a big room with so many people, get up on the table so he could walk back and forth on the conference table. So those are Bill Webb's feet that you're looking at. And the thing that he had is he had this delightful tapestry-sized, pre-made, permanent map of one of the important levels of the Rappin' Athic dungeon. And it was an interest, and it was such a lovely piece that he would just unroll the whole thing. And you could, right off the bat, everybody could just mm-hmm. see the entirety of the dungeon available. And then you could make, as a group, you could make strategic choices about where to go next, like you kind of knew the whole thing. So that is not a thing that I would customarily think about, just tell the players the entire dungeon off the top of the map and let them decide from there. So it's a very different play experience, kind of motivated because he had this beautiful map that he wanted to show off, but it fundamentally worked. And we were making intelligent strategic choices about where to go. And it was a perfectly fine way to play with that just out in the open for everybody. Mapping was a non-issue, and it worked.
You know, the funny thing is, this is something that we both also then took on and played with in our own Big Bad, right? I'm going back to the Big Bad board here. Because I think I remember having a lot of discussions about, like, how do we deal with the fact if the games are being run over time of the potential of information about the layout getting out, right? Does that help one of the later teams and give them an unfair advantage? And I think that led us to like, okay, well, just the map will just be available all the time. Everyone will see it all constantly. Except that there are secrets, right? We still found ways to put like secret things in there. Some that were even like placed on the board and you should be able to see it. And we had some funny moments there where like, wow, that is, that's this, the giant stone golem guarding the bridge is standing right there. No one can see him because he's so well camouflaged against the rock face. So good.
That was the best. You know, Bill did the same thing, right? There were a couple of secret rooms or secret entrances. He was actually, for what it's worth, I know he was actually rolling randomly to determine some secret rooms. So same thing there. And you can in fact get away with some of that stuff. I remember, so there was, it's funny because it might've actually been like the Tomb of Horrors. There was some really, really early D&D tournament where people were complaining that they were running the same scenario Friday and Saturday, and word had gotten out about all the secrets on the Friday. And so the Saturday teams were outperforming. And then I think after that, even if they had a giant two-day tournament, they'd have different levels that people were running through on the different days to distinguish that.
Yeah, that is those are interesting problems in my brain, and those are the cases where I'm like, okay, now I'm going to modify the design of the adventure to fit maybe not quite the physical, but like, I don't know, the temporal needs of the setting. Right. But I do think about stuff like, you know, I think one of the things we're tiptoeing around a little bit here is the fact that honestly these days I run more games I run more games at conventions than I do like out of my home. Yes. And so just like portability and the ability to set up and move around at a convention is very interesting to me. And so I started I was looking for this other piece of equipment that I once owned that I got rid of ages ago, but I wanted to share this with you. I don't know if you remember this thing, but I had this thing called the Battle Top, which was this hard shell case, which opened up and had little legs and then turned into this raised platform, right? So you had this little, and it came with, I still have the Red Erase mat that came with. It fit perfectly on top of the battle mat, a battle top. But the idea was, and I've seen other use cases of this, I found another one here, I'll chuck another image up, of just like this idea of like a raised surface. And the idea being, like, I guess that you can use more of your tabletop for miniatures because now people have room for their pencils and character sheets and books and whatnot underneath.
This is a non-trivial issue. And I think that, you know, because occasionally I do think about, like, just have an open space to have it gridless, right? And maybe bring some terrain, bring some stand-up trees or a building or a wall or something like that. And, you know, a little part of the reason why I do like using a battle map is actually just to establish the part of the table that we're going to be playing on that isn't for papers or books or dice or snacks or stuff like that. So actually just laying that out to begin and then kind of politely asking people to keep their kind of papers on the corners of that instead of all over the table is itself a little bit helpful. So that the space usage is an important issue.
I mean, that's just a common practice now for me when running games out of the convention is even if I don't end up using the thing, I will still lay the battle mat out first because it's such a painful thing in the middle of the game where I go, okay, we need the battle mat. Yes. I'm going to roll it out. Yes. Oh, can you move your soda? Can you move can you make room for this, please? Oh, put all. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing how much we fill the table with our crap.
Yes. Right? It's totally true.
The table
true.
Just becomes full. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I really, really like having a two-sided map. I've had some one-sided maps, and I've stopped using them because I really, really like a map that has squares on one side that I mostly use for interior spaces. And then, there we go, and then hexes, thank you, Paul, on the other side that I mostly use for outdoor spaces. And that's exactly what I was doing with my Star Frontiers game. And then there's a little bit of an issue if you need to flip it.
If you use a flip,
there's the overlap of the snakes and the dice and the papers and the books and all stuff like that. It's a little bit awkward. So if I can, I like to, ideally, if you can focus on like one or the other in a session, makes it a little bit easier.
You know, the other thing, if I'll call out one other annoyance of your standard rolled battle mat like this is it's a little big. It's a little awkward to carry around the convention floor, right? It's doesn't really fit in any of my bags. I'm either just carrying it in my hand or I've got it slid like a sword across my back. It's not perfect.
Well, how big? Yeah. How big is your battle mat, right? Okay, so I have actually two that are the slightly smaller. So this one here is 22 by 25 in squares. And at Max and Lauren's kind of smallish condo here in New York, our gaming table just barely fits this, right? So this is the only thing I could do. I would travel with it. I could actually stick it. It would stick up a little bit out of my backpack. I'd take the subway. It would be perfectly fine. But this would be okay for like a standard party in a dungeon would work pretty well. But then when I started running my Wizards Warzone events where I've got PvP with possibly up to 8 players at conventions, and their wizards casting long spells, and they kind of need a lot of space to maneuver. This wasn't big enough. And I actually started using two of these taped together. And then I finally got what they call the mega map in order to satisfy that particular use case. And this here is 32 by 46 inches. And this is what I, and this is frankly just barely big enough to handle eight competing wizards on it. But at a convention, they've got bigger tables. It's worthwhile. When I travel on the plane, I actually briefly for a couple hours, I fold it up. I can just barely stick it in my pack. As soon as I get in the hotel room, I take it out. I unroll it. I don't want to be creased use it that way. And the other thing I will say with the grid is that you may notice that I labeled the, and if anybody's played my Wizards Warzone game, you know that I've labeled the coordinates. So the columns are letters and the on the other side, the rows are all numbered, as you can see here. And I did that specifically to, you wind up playing a battleship game just for the invisibility powers. So when someone does go invisible, I did actually commit, like you write down on a little card what coordinate you're currently moving to. And then as somebody else was moving or casting a spell or casting a detection, I, in my head, was doing 3D trigonometry to figure out, is this person in range of the detection of the spell? And I couldn't possibly do that if I didn't have the grid coordinates on the map. So that's a case where I absolutely couldn't do anything in an open play space to do that. I will say, having experimented for a year or two with that, I now change the game. So that's a case that that's enough of a hassle. I could just barely do it myself. It wasn't fun for anybody. It was a little bit mental taxing. So now, instead, I actually do change how invisibility works. And I just say, we got to leave the miniature on the table for practical purposes. Don't worry about the coordinates. You can't target them with a targeted spell. You have an AC and saving throw bonus. But I did try that with the coordinates. I mean, you could use that if you're in a dungeon and there's just like a surprise or a pit or a monster, you can keep track of exactly where it is as characters move over that space. That can be important.
I want to go back though, Dan, to the size of that battle mat, right? Because that's got to be annoying to walk around the convention with, right? Are you getting stuck in elevators and revolving doors and such?
I haven't had a problem. I usually carry it vertical, so if I keep it in the hotel room, hopefully it's nearby. And as we walk from the hotel room to the game space, I know to carry it like this. I actually haven't had a big problem. It's worked pretty well for me, honestly.
Here, let me.
The main problem in my head is, do I have a table big enough for it?
Yeah, having a table big enough for it—that's another problem.
Right.
My preferred solution these days is this guy. This is my battle map.
Okay. Okay.
It is a 9x12 box. It's about 3 inches deep. It's called Melee Mats. And then inside the box are a variety of these kind of boards, and they're folded like board game boards. I'm trying to get one out here to show you, right? So they kind of fold out like board game boards. They have grids on them. They're wet erase, they're dry erase or whatever. Right. They fold out pretty big.
Okay.
I have a picture that's got an expanded view of the content. Yeah. So it's a nice little kit, right? It comes with some of these vinyl stickers. So if you just need like a barrel or a pit or fire, you can just jam them on there. A couple different colors of dry erase marker. They fold out. And the funny thing is, even the box is a component of it. The top of the box, if you need a castle, is a castle. It's got a grid for the roof.
Whoa! Yes. Yes.
The bottom of the box is a hill.
Yes. Oh my god. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
I might have seen that, but I didn't realize that the box was a castle. Oh my god.
The box itself is all part of it. Yeah, it's all they use every part of the bison here for
this. Somebody cared about
it. I will say
that.
Even the inside of the box is like a gladiatorial ring.
No way. Oh, what a great product that is.
It's very clever. Now, I'll say the downside, Dan, the part that you're not going to like is it is all square, right? Everything is square grid. There's a lot, you know, it's double-sided, so you get grass on one and wood and stone and whatnot. There's a bunch of options, but There's no hexes.
You know what's interesting is that I've with my Starford Tears game, I think my players, you know, got quickly accustomed. Like frankly, when we started, we never played with miniatures. Most of these, yeah. you know, players around 30, they're not super hardcore gamers. It didn't even occur to me that they'd never played with miniatures on a table. So right off the bat, they're like, what's going on here? What's happening? And I was like, oh, we need to induct people into using miniatures. So that went pretty well, and they got accustomed, and they had standard, you know, miniatures to represent their character that they could recognize. It went pretty well. I will say that one or two players never got used to hexes, and they were always like apologizing for, I'm not entirely sure how to move my character on the hex map, because it's like, you know, angle, and they were never entirely comfortable with that. So I'm not entirely offended by just using grids for everything all the time. It's not a crazy thing to do. Again, there's like, if you need to keep track of coordinates, that certainly makes it easier. So it's not an insane thing to do, to just standardize the squares for everything. I don't hate it.
I mean, I've never used the hexes. Never used the hex side.
Okay, so, really? Okay.
So I'm used to just square grid for everything. So it works for me.
Okay.
Yeah, but I like this thing mostly because this box, I mean, it's bulky, right? It's 9x12x3. It's got some heft to it.
Yeah.
But it fits in my backpack. It's right in my backpack. No problem. Right?
Boy, that's A+.
There's even a little, right? That, and this is so dorky, Dan, but if I open up the box, there's a little bit of depth left in there. Well, I can fit my copy of OD&D right in there. Fits right in there.
Paul, we're in season 8 of this D&D show, and you're apologizing for being dorky.
Book of spells.
What are we even doing?
There you go. Fits right in. So, yeah, yeah. So I mean, I could probably encapsulate an entire D&D campaign in this box, which is real nice.
That's super. Wow. I just love it when a product, you know, demonstrates that someone cared, right? They weren't slopping it out. It's like, we wanted this. We understand the use case. We care about it. We thought about it. We went through some iterations. That's gold standard.
I don't know if that's intentional or not, but look at that. Two booklet-sized books fit perfectly in there. I suppose you would counter with like one 8x12 will also probably fit perfectly in there. That's probably true.
Yeah, yeah.
You had your standard D&D module.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. That is wonderful. Oh, and thank you for showing that to me, Paul. Because that would absolutely not be in my head as an option. As I'm frankly still thinking about like how am I going to run the game next weekend. That's an option I never would have thought of. So, you can dry erase on that. Is that right?
It's dry erase. Now I'll put the exploded view of all the contents back on the. So if you look at this image, there's a downside here. So the downside is they were clever about having like all these nice textures on the different sides. So you can get wood or stone or grass. Not every marker shows up great on those textures.
Yes. That
annoyingly, the cobblestone texture, the cobblestones themselves are about half a square, and so your eye gets a little confused about what's the grid. Where's the grid on this thing? Right?
Yes.
So I wouldn't hate it if at least one of the flat sides was just your kind of standard white or tan, so I could just draw. The only place where I get that standard tan color is the inside of the bottom of the box, which I would love a full size sheet of that. Like this thing. That's a little painful to draw on, and the smaller squares within the bigger squares is just why did they do that?
I run into this issue sometimes with mapping software. There's usually, you know, like maybe half a dozen different texture options, and I always wind up resorting to the one that's the most high contrast.
This one texture is the one I pretty much use all the time. Like you can kind of see the grid pretty well.
Yeah.
It's got a indoor-y, stoneworky kind of texture to it.
When you initially pulled it out, particularly that brown one, I actually couldn't tell that it was gridded initially.
Yeah, you can't even see the grid on that. It's real hard to see.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, that is definitely the downside to this little cat. I wouldn't hate it if they made a version that had a nice, bright, high contrast surface in there.
Yeah, I see that. And that is what they, you know, that's what they do succeed at with your standard ivory colored battle maps. So that does
totally agree.
They did do the right thing there. Yeah.
Yep.
Sorry,
there's one other point I wanted to make. We were talking about like Dwarven Forge or 3D objects or the lower right. version ones. I've never seen this myself, but I've heard stories of the old school guys using dominoes. They would just take dominoes and set them up on edge and then build the maze out of dominoes. How do you feel about that? About having like a real cheap but fast 3D building block for your maze?
I like being a little punky, right? I like being kind of on the do-it-yourself punky vibe. I use craft rings for spell templates in my games. And again, if they're a little bit off, now that's the size of the spell in my game, frankly. So I like that kind of thing. I think way in the past, I must have heard that. I think I tried that as a teenager. And the first thing that you run into is that you instantly run out of your domino set, right? So you're going to, in order to make that feasible, you're going to need multiple domino sets that you're going to have to go out and buy and carry around.
That makes sense.
I almost would prefer to put them down flat for stability, like propping them up for walls. I'm sure they're going to fall down.
They're going to fall over.
Yeah. Let me ask this. Yeah. So about the Dwarven Forge, as I think about what I'm going to do next weekend at your place, I don't have actual Dwarven Forge material here to practice with. I kind of wish I knew like how much time it takes to lay out a space. So I almost wish that I could practice kind of domino style, moving the tiles around in a rather clip fashion. Do you have how long would it take you, Paul, to just put out a plain, I don't know, 10 by 10 inch room? Would that take a minute? Would that take
wouldn't be,
10 mean, minutes?
It depends on like what level of detail you're going for and what it like. Yeah. Is it really just a 10 by 10, you know, room and that's the end? You're fishing through the pieces looking for, I need this corner, I need this wall joint, whatever. And then, am I annoyed about how repeating it is because I've used the same piece over and over and over again? Mm-hmm. It's one of those things, I think, where you could slap it together real quick, or you could spend a bunch of time being like, oh no, this piece looks nicer than that piece, and let me make some artistic choices.
I shouldn't laugh. I mean, someone's going to do that. Can I come over to your place and practice?
Yeah, sure. Come on over. Okay. I mean, it's all easily accessible. We can play with it. Maybe while the players are making their characters, you can be playing with Dwarven Forge.
Excellent. That seems like a plan. I like that.
Excellent. Great. We are just about out of time there, Dan. Any final thoughts on battle mats?
I love the maps. I love the mats so much. So I think that as one other thing, I ran into an interesting thing at one of the conventions we went to this spring, whereby I was going to do my Theater of the Mind with a map if I needed it. And one of the players actually started, you know, critiquing that of like, if you've got a map on the table, why not use it? And if the map was out, they wanted kind of a standard play experience to use it all the time for every encounter. That's not a crazy argument, frankly. So I think that I'm leaning towards, and it worked super well with my Star Frontiers campaign, to just have a battle map out all the time and have that be the expectation. So these days I'm leaning towards setting clear expectations that you're going to handle things in kind of a standard way. Be willing to resize the dungeon, I think, has been working well for me, of like, well, I have these materials and, you know, make sure they fit. And if you're modifying the dungeon a little bit, I'm not going to get too picky about that. Maybe approximate the size. If that's what we have, the play is still going to be good. And try to be, you know, I'm going to be practicing this week, but try to have a fast-paced way of setting it up one way or the other, if that's a wet erase battle map or something else. To me, I think that those are the the important things. And I do like having a map that I can flip and have hexes and squares on the two sides.
Yeah, I agree on general about the just that speed is key. As neat as a lot of these variations are, and I've spent tons of time already. I built that whole crazy thing to mount my projector, and I've built other similar ridiculous things. I still find myself coming back to the good old wet erase battle mat.
Yeah.
Just for the sake of speed. It's just so much faster. Yeah. I also agree in putting out. I always put it out early. I think, but that's more of about convenience for me than anything else. I have no qualms about throwing a battle mat on the table and then never using it.
I'd rather
use it when we hit the necessity, where we go, you know what, it's just going to be faster, easier if I just draw here. Then, you know what, honestly, and another thing I will do is in my quest games, I keep a very small, like, maybe 8x10 whiteboard that's like supposed to magnet onto your fridge or something. I keep that on hand if I ever just need to draw something and show it to the players.
Yeah.
Oh, it's this shape. It looks like this. Here you go. It looks like this, right? It's just faster than, oh, let me sketch the whole freaking room on the battle mat just so you know exactly what it looks like.
Max does that a lot with a piece of notebook paper. It's pretty reasonable. And I will also say, don't use coordinates. That was an experiment that I'm happy to have outcome in the negative. That's not the best play experience. So I'm personally abandoning the coordinates, and so should you.
Okay, fascinating. I'd love to dig into that more, but we don't have time for it, Dan. We just don't have time. viewers, if you have opinions on what works best for you at the table, what are you hoping to see when you go to a convention game? Do you want to see a lot of miniatures? Do you want to see 3D terrain? Is the spectacle worth the delays, or do you just want it to go fast? Or do you have another piece of technology that we haven't reviewed here? I'd be very curious to know about other stuff you've used that fits other certain niches. Leave us a comment here in the video. We'd love to hear from you. Maybe it's a topic we'll return to someday.
And also, what do you want to see on our live stream that's going to be happening all next weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday? We're going to be live streaming our D&D game from Paul's place. So what do you want to see? What would look better to you, the viewer? You want to see a battle map? You want to see us running with no grid like Book of War? Do you want to see us using Dwarven Forge? Tell us that. We're still making our plans. So that could feed into what you see for our big live stream. What was that, July 3rd, 4th, 5th, I think, that's coming this weekend. So say, look to the channel on those days and see what we're doing and see if it's working for you. We want to hear that. Do remember that you can like, follow, and subscribe to us. We're on YouTube and Twitch and Facebook and TikTok and Loops and GitHub, probably some other places that I'm not remembering right now. We have the handle Wandering DMs on all those sites. So please look for us there and demarcate that like button.
If you prefer to listen to us in audio-only podcast format, you can do so. Those podcasts are available on our website at wanderingdms.com. Also available through various third-party carriers like iTunes and Spotify and Pocket Cast. If you're listening to this show right now on one of those sites and it gives the ability to do so, please consider giving us a 5-star review. That helps other users of that site find us, and we really appreciate it.
We really do. And of course, huge thanks to our patrons who support the show. If you'd like to join them, please visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. Like Paul said, every tier gets you access to our private Discord server where the conversation's happening 24/7 with some of the smartest people in gaming. And they have great insights and great observations. And our patrons are the most intelligent, wise, and charismatic people in all the land. So we would love for you to join us there. And we'll be there in about 10 minutes to continue the conversation with a live video after that. So again, don't forget, we hope you'll tune in along about Friday, this July 3rd, for the start of our 3 days of rock-solid D&D actual play that I will be DMing with all of our best gaming friends, including Paul as a player, one of the unusual things we do. So I'm super, super excited about going up to Paul's place and doing that. We hope you'll join us this Friday, Saturday, Sunday, whenever you can. Now, other exciting stuff. That's not the end of the exciting stuff coming up, is it?
No, there's more. I was wondering if you were going to mention it, Dan.
I think you should tell us about that, because I'm so surprised. I'm speechless, Paul, that this is happening.
So we have a special guest coming on the show the week after on our show on Sunday the 12th. We will be joined by Kelsey Dion to talk about Shadow Dark. So very excited to have her on the show. I'm going to dig into Shadow Dark. Some folks may know I keep referencing it, and I keep talking about how much I want to run a campaign of it. Actually, I was just at a party yesterday with some friends who were kind of trying to strong arm me into getting that campaign going. That might happen as early as this coming fall. So yeah, we're going to dig into Shadow Dark and talk about you know, how it bridges the gap between the old school and the new school, and what it takes from 5e, what it takes from OSR, and why. What I'm super curious to hear Kelsey talk a little bit about just what decision she made and why. It's going to be very interesting.
Shadow, I mean, my understanding of Shadow Dark is huge among these kids these days, which is really truly wonderful. When we were at GaryCon, they had a whole gallery just devoted just to Shadow Dark games the whole convention long. We were somewhere between stunned and impressed at how popular it is. So I'm personally really looking forward to speaking with Kelsey and seeing her thoughts about the whole design process and where she's going to go from here. Fantastic. So that's going to be Sunday, that's July 12th. Is that right, Paul?
Sunday the 12th. That's right.
Fantastic. Awesome. Okay. So I think that is enough to fill our dockets for a little while. So we hope that you'll join us for our live stream starting on Friday. We hope you'll be back on July 12th for the Kelsey Dion interview. All kinds of fascinating things that are coming up. I'm certainly excited to be at Paul's place this weekend for the big anniversary event that we'll be celebrating this big adventure, right? And of course, don't forget that we are live practically every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. What more do you want, really? So we hope you'll join us again the next couple of weeks for more thought-provoking discussions.
We'll see you then.